Well, good morning. We are in 2 Corinthians, and things go as planned. Next Sunday will be the last sermon in 2 Corinthians. This probably sounds terrible to say, but I'm glad we went through the book of 2 Corinthians, but I'll be glad to move on. Before we begin the sermon, I'd like to make a confession. Last Sunday, as you know, I promoted a Scrabble challenge that Carol Hale or Bertalot had challenged me to, claiming she could beat me. And so at the brown bag lunch, she brought her elaborate Scrabble board and taught me how to play, and we played a game. At the end, my score was higher than her score. But I'll have to admit, I cheated. The entire game, as fast and as furious as I could cheat, I was cheating. And I barely beat her then. I had a little help. Young children were helping me. While she was figuring out how to play, I was going through the extra pieces trying to find the ones I wanted to make words, you know, this far from her, and she never saw me. So I did it well. I've had plenty of practice. The truth is, if I hadn't cheated, she'd have whipped me rather handily. So I won't be available for a rematch. Well, let's get on. 2 Corinthians, we're in chapter 12, the last half of it, verses 11 through 21. I want to, you see the outline somewhere, I titled it Friendly Fire. Somebody tell me what we mean when you hear that term friendly fire. What is that in a reference to?
Military.
The military. Shooting their own people accidentally, just in the confusion of the conflict. Some of our guys get killed by our guys. You know, it's not intentional by any means. So that's what we mean typically when you hear that term, friendly fire. I want to talk about that a little bit today, but put just a little, add a little to that definition as we go through the study. And this has been building up in the book of 2 Corinthians, and it seems to me, and we've talked about this in a small group, that Paul is getting more intense as the book makes progress. He's getting a little bit more where he is not beating around the bush. He's telling it like it is, telling what they need to hear. He's doing it in love. You can see that in there, but he's pretty plain spoken. So, let's read our text beginning in verse 11 of chapter 12. Paul says, I have not become a fool in boasting. You have compelled me, for I ought to have been commended by you, for in nothing was I behind the most eminent apostles, though I am nothing. Truly the signs of an apostle were accomplished among you with all perseverance, in signs and wonders and mighty deeds. For what is it in which you were inferior to other churches, except that I myself was not burdensome to you? Forgive me this wrong. Now for the third time I am ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I do not seek yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. And I will very gladly spend and be spent for your souls. Though the more abundantly I love you, the less I am loved. But be that as it may, I did not burden you, Nevertheless, being crafty, I called you by cunning. Did I take advantage of you by any of those whom I sent to you? I urged Titus and sent our brother with him. Did Titus take advantage of you? Did we not walk in the same spirit? Did we not walk in the same steps? Again, do you think that we excuse ourselves to you? We speak before God in Christ, but we do all things, beloved, for your edification. For I fear that when I come, I shall not find you such as I wish, and that I shall be found by you such as you do not wish. Lest there be contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, backbitings, whisperings, conceits, tumults. Lest when I come again, my God will humble me among you. And I shall mourn for many who have sinned before and have not repented of the uncleanness, fornication, and lewdness which they have practiced. Friendly fire. I want to define friendly fire by adding just one element to that. And you see, I've got two words there in the introduction: carelessness and intentional. Is the friendly fire due to carelessness? And I don't necessarily would not say that in the military sense that we would use that word, that friendly fire would always result as a result of carelessness. It's just, it happens in the chaos that's going on in a firefight that it happens. Not necessarily carelessness, but let's let that be the word we will use. Then over against that is the word intentional. Now, in the military, if someone intentionally kills their own people, we don't call that friendly fire. That's murder, treason, or something. At least murder. But I want to give you sort of an illustration. Let's suppose that view your Christian life as a war. View you as a soldier in the war. The Bible gives us that analogy of Christianity and of being a Christian, a disciple of Christ. So let's use it. We are soldiers, and we are going along, and we are in enemy territory, and we're looking, you know, on our guard, looking out, being careful, looking around us as we make progress, and we're looking around us to see if there may be the enemy may be near. And you're going along, and suddenly you hear a burst of machine gun fire, and you know you've been hit. And you're able to turn, and as you turn, you see one of your fellow soldiers with his machine gun pointed at you, and the look on his face, maybe it's a smile, maybe it's a sneer, but you know he has intentionally shot you. Sometimes in our Christian life, among our own military camp, if you would, there is friendly fire that feels that way. It feels like our own people are out to get us, that they are out with intentions to harm us, to drag us down, to ruin us. So I want to add that element to our definition this morning for friendly fire. Friendly fire being, for our use this morning, is harm that comes to one person within the body of Christ by another person for whatever means. It may be carelessness, it may be negligence, or it may be intentional harm. Those kind of issues. Now, for example, I know of two churches that I've heard of within the last month or two that are about to undergo internal conflict. And one of them is over the issue of same-sex marriage. When this came out and it became it seemed to be apparent that the Christian church and Christian people were going to be forced to take a stand one way or the other. And this one particular church that I heard just a little bit about, it seems that that issue possibly may create conflict within that church. Now, that suggests to me that that church should have been taking somewhat of a stand long before now, or the people would already know where the church stood. If the people know where a church stands, where the leadership stands and is going to stand on it, there's very little chance that there will be conflict over issues like that. But it happens. That was the particular issue that came up. In our context today in 2 Corinthians, we've kind of went over this as we've gone through the book, but let's review it just a little bit. Paul has been to Corinth. He helped start the church at Corinth, was there I think a year and a half or so, and then he moved on to work and start other churches. Sometime after his departure, things begin to, perhaps we would use the word fall apart. There was open sin within the church. There was a misuse of a lot of God-given abilities. There was a lot of fornication, or not, maybe I should say a lot, but there was unrepentant, unchallenged fornication going on within the church. And there's also a group of people who came into the church, dropped into the church, claiming to be apostles, claiming to have come from Jerusalem, claiming to have the backing of Peter and James and John and the original apostles, claiming to have the approval of those men. And they spent a lot of time, it seems, trying to undermine Paul's work there. Friendly fire. Intentional friendly fire. Belittling Paul. Creating doubt in the people's mind about Paul's intentions, about Paul's methods, about Paul's abilities, about Paul's authority. And this has been going on. And Paul gets word of this. Now, we understand that Paul didn't get an email. Paul didn't get a text. All right, this had been going on for months before Paul heard of it. It would have taken perhaps a month or two or three for the word to get to Paul if someone had hopped up and made haste to go tell him. So this goes, the communication back and forth is tremendously slow compared to what we're accustomed to. So this goes on for a long time. And Paul writes back to them the book of 1 Corinthians, trying to straighten out and give them instruction on the issues that they're going through. He makes one visit there, and I'm not sure exactly when, but he is not there now, and he's writing them a second letter. And the stuff is still going on. It's still happening. And Paul has been felt compelled to explain his own position, his own authority to them. And that comes across, it can come across as boasting. If you have been reading through the book and reading through it each week with us as we preach to it, you've seen that word. We've seen that word quite a bit, boasting. Now, if I were to ask you, is boasting a virtue or a vice? Most of us would say it's a vice because we look at that word with a negative connotation. We look at it as something that ought not to be done. But I want to just suggest to you that boasting, if it is just a presentation of the facts of a person's life or facts of a person's actions, things that have occurred, it doesn't have to have that added element of pride and arrogance and conceit that we tend to trap with that word boast. And I think that's what we'll assume is the case with Paul. Paul is stating his authority. He's stating the things that have happened to him. He's stating the facts of being caught up to the third heaven and seeing visions by God. He's stating the things that he's endured. But there's a reluctance to do it. It is not that he has that added element of pride and arrogance wanting to promote himself. It's that he feels like he has to do it to just remind them of the facts. So that's where we've been for the last week or two. Now, I'm going to tell you four things that we might can see from this text. All right, the first one is this. Friendly fire can cause you to take risk that others should have assumed. Friendly fire can cause you to take risk that others should have assumed. You see in verse 11, Paul says, I've become a fool in boasting. So Paul has been boasting or telling the things that he has done. He says, you've compelled me. I felt forced to do it by you. And here's why. He goes on. For I ought to have been commended by you. You ought to have taken up for me. You ought to have answered these false teachers who were trying to ruin me and ruin my reputation. You ought to have been setting them straight. But they didn't. So Paul feels like he has to set the facts straight before them again. And what he's risking is looking like he's boasting. Has any of y'all heard Donald Trump speak lately? Everybody get my point? There is something about the way he tells all the things he's done and all the things he can do, that there's something in my sinful nature that wishes somebody would put him in his place. Now, maybe he ought to be president. I don't know, and I'm not saying yay or nay on that, but I'll say this. If he becomes president, he's got some humongous shoes to feel that he has made himself. Here's what I'll do, here's what I'll do, here's what we'll do. If he pulls half of that off, I'll be impressed. And somewhere in this world, there's going to be somebody that's just as proud and arrogant as he is. And they're not going to back off. They're going to stand up to him just like he claims he will stand up to the world. And listen, over the course of history, within the last 300 or 400 years, there have been wars started because of two strutting peacocks who were at odds with one another. There's something in my sinful nature that detest a person who boasts. Not the person, but just the activity. I don't like it. It just turns me off. And I think that I'm not the only one. I think that most people are that way. And I think that's the risk Paul is taking. When Paul is laying out all the things that he's went through, laying out all of the reasons for his authority, the background of the things that he has with the Corinthians, he's risking looking like a braggart. And that's a real risk. It ought not to have been necessary. The church at Corinth knew him. They should have had his back. But they didn't. I'm aware of one or two incidents in my life, last few years, where somebody in this room, maybe more than one somebody, has took up for me against negative comments about me. And in doing so, in taking up for me, they took a risk. What risk did they take? That I was worthy to be defended. There may have been something in me they didn't know, that maybe the accusations may have been legitimate or whatever, but there, the risk was there in defending somebody. When I became aware of the incident, how do you think I felt? Knowing that somebody had my back, I felt strengthened. I felt stronger. I felt lighter. I felt like we are walking through and going through this war together. That's one feeling that I had. The other feeling came a little later. As I contemplated on that and found myself, probably not literally, but on my face before God saying, Lord, help me to be worthy of the risk that they assumed. Friendly fire among us can cause those kinds of risks to happen, to take place. Secondly, friendly fire can cut you deeply, especially when it appears to be intentional. Let's read verses 13 to 15 again. He says, "For what is it in which you were inferior to other churches, except that I myself was not burdensome to you? Forgive me this wrong." One thing that Paul did not do in his relationship with the church of Corinth is take support from them, it seems. This is not the only reference we see to that. But it seems like when Paul was at Corinth, the Corinthian church did not support him financially. He supported himself by tent making, or he was supported by other churches. I think we've seen a little evidence of that in the past as well. But the church did not support him. And apparently one of the things that these false apostles are throwing up in Paul's face through the church at Corinth is that Paul didn't even think enough of you to let you support him. He thought you were too weak. He didn't do that. And he should have. You should have been supporting Paul if he was legitimate. And Paul, it looks like, sarcastically says, if this is the wrong, if this is a wrong that I did you, forgive me this wrong. Perhaps he's being sarcastic. I'm not sure. But then he goes on and tells them, he says, I'm coming again. This will be the third trip I'm making to you. And when I come this time, you won't be supporting me either. It'll not happen. And then he gives this principle, or applies this principle that's in life to the situation. He says, and here's why. The children, and we're only put the word, you think of the word young in there. We're not talking about a 40-year-old child or a son or daughter. For children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. In other words, in Paul's situation, he says, I was the spiritual parent. I started the church. You were young Christian church, young Christians in the church. I was the parent. You were the child. It is not your place as the young child to take care of me in that regard, but not your responsibility. Rather, it is my responsibility to take care of you. And yet, in that kind of relationship, Paul has been cut. He has been hurt deeply by them. A lot of us know the pain of being cut deeply by those we love. Perhaps a spouse, perhaps a child. And the hurt and the pain that is there. It hurts. And it hurts because we have expectations. No one of us expects our children to treat us badly. Paul says in these verses, he says, the more that I love you, the more that I love you, it seems, the less you love me. Paul says, I will give myself, I will spend myself, I will be spent. In other words, Paul says, I will use my life up, expend myself. I will use myself until there is nothing left to give. I love you. And yet it seems that there is nothing in return by your actions. Expectations. Third thing. Friendly fire can be minimized by avoiding potential accusations. On the same subject, Paul did not take support from the Corinthian church, and perhaps Paul saw the potential in this particular case of what could happen. I don't know why, but for some reason Paul didn't. And now the accusations are coming that Paul is trying to line his pocket with things that he gets from you. He's wanting to take up this offering. And he's sending Titus and some of these other people to take this offering, and they're going to carry it back to him. And where do you think that money's going to end up? All right? There have been a few times in my Christian life when not necessarily this church, but churches, wanted to give to someone. And gosh, you know, it seems like the recipient of the gift is such a phony to me. And I hate having that feeling, but I hate worse following through with it. And that's the accusation that these people are trying, the thoughts that these people are trying to put into the heads of the church, of the people of the church. Paul is just after your money. Yeah, he didn't take your money, trying to make himself look good by not taking your money, but they're taking up an offering, they're coming, so they say it's going to the church at Jerusalem, and yeah, sure. How do we know where it's going? So that's the thought. Well, Paul foresees these financial accusations, and he minimizes it in two ways. One, by not taking money from them. They have no concrete evidence to show that Paul has been after their money. And Paul makes that point in verse 14 where he says, I do not seek yours, but you. I don't want your things. I want you. I want a relationship with you. I don't want your money. I don't want your stuff. I want a healthy spiritual relationship with you. And he asks them the questions. I want you to think of the boldness of these questions. Because when these questions are asked, just by asking them, the people are forced to look for evidence against Paul. Okay? If I ask Brian McDaniel, if I say, Brian, have I ever cheated you? What just went through his head? all of mine and his relationships in the past. Searching and looking, just like a computer scanning, you know, looking for your search you put in, like a Google search. Looking for instances in mine and his relationship in the past where I cheated him. He can't help it. That's what went through his head, I would be relatively sure. Just me asking the question forced him to look. And that's what happens with these questions. Look at verse 17. He says, "Did I take advantage of you by any of those whom I sent to you?" So what do? They're thinking, did that happen? Did Paul take advantage of that? Paul's making them look to see. Where's the evidence? Show me the evidence. They're not looking for no evidence. They're looking for evidence. He's making them look with his question. And the evidence can be damning to him if they find anything. What answer does he expect? No. Verse 18, "I urged Titus and sent our brother with him." Did Titus take advantage of you? They look for evidence. The answer that is expected is no. "Did we not walk in the same spirit?" Did Titus not walk in the same spirit with me as we were together in spirit? Yes. "Did we not walk in the same steps?" Yes. Verse 19, "Do you think that we excuse ourselves to you?" Yes, he is. He is explaining it in such a way that they have to acknowledge what's going on. And then the last one, number 4, dealing with friendly fire will require courage to speak the truth because you care. Dealing with friendly fire will require courage to speak the truth because you care. A number of years ago, I was talking to a guy that used to go to church here, and they were having issues with a child. I mean, it wasn't funny, but even though I laughed, the way he put it, is that ringing? Okay. Y'all know what tinnitus is? I've had tinnitus for about 3 years, and I thought maybe that's just my ear. Laughing about the guy. Anyway, this guy came to me and was telling me about the issue with the child. And he said, we had a come to Jesus meeting. And I never had heard that phrase before, but I knew exactly what he meant. All right, and from a parent, maybe. A come to Jesus meeting. Come to Jesus meeting. What I would assume that is where a parent sets, or one person, it sets the other person down and says, "We're fixing to get serious about this. You're fixing to give some answers. We're fixing to get this straightened out." Come to Jesus meeting. Paul's getting ready to have a come to Jesus meeting with this church at Corinth. My mom always had this phrase, "Well, your daddy gets home." That was a long time, yet so short, not long enough. I remember once we lived right by a little country church down at Halley, Arkansas, southeast Arkansas, and lived right by the church, and my grandmother lived next door to us. The church is on the other side. And my grandmother had some tiger lilies. I didn't know what they were at the time, but I know that flower when I see it because of this incident. Long-stemmed flower, you know, orangey-looking yellow flower lily on the end of this long stem. And me and my cousin was out there playing, and I had, you know, pulled off one of those flowers, you know, stem about that long. And my aunt was driving down the road. And I, just, you know, being a silly 10-year-old kid or however old I was, ran out to the road and ran alongside her car, you know, waving that tiger lily. And, you know, she's, you know, trying to make sure she doesn't run over me and this kind of stuff. My dad and them were working up at church, putting a roof on the church up there. And I didn't know it, but he saw that. Well, not only did he see it, but my mother saw it from the house. Well, she promptly calls me in there and gives me a whipping for running, you know, out in the road. And so I get a whipping, and she didn't say, well, your daddy gets home, but daddy did get home. And he confronted me with it and had a switch or a belt or whatever. I said, well, daddy, I already got one whipping. And he said, well, you're fixed to get another one. So I got another one. But I never ran at cars with tiger lilies again. I do too. Bring back bad memories. No more beating around the bush. Paul is through being tactful. Look at what he says in verse 20. He says, I'm afraid. Here's what I'm afraid is going to happen. This is my translation. Here's what I'm afraid is going to happen. I'm afraid you're going to keep on acting the way you're acting. I'm afraid you're going to keep on living the way you're living. There's been unrepentant fornication in your midst, unrepentant adultery in your midst, unrepentant sensuality, lewdness among you. And it is still going on. And I'm afraid that when I come, it's still going to be there. And when I come and we get together, there's going to be lots of stuff go on. God don't need to say everything comes to his mind. That's the point. I didn't say it. But when I get there, what I'm afraid is going to happen is there are going to be some strife between us, between you and me. There's going to be some arguments. There's going to be some contentions, you see at the end of verse 20. There's going to be outbursts of wrath. There's going to be jealousies that are manifested. There's going to be backbitings and whisperings. That's going on now, it's going to be magnified when I get there. I'm afraid that's what's going to happen. Because you have been warned, you've been warned, you've been warned. I've told you, I've begged with you, I've pleaded with you. I'm coming. And it ain't going to be pretty. I think that's pretty much the tone of where Paul's at. You know, it takes courage to speak that way with love. It takes a disciplined person to be able to speak that plainly and not be angry. But it can be done. It takes a disciplined person to be that upfront, to be that bold, to speak the truth. Because there comes a point, because you care, because you love, that things can't just be covered up. Things can't just continue to be swept under the rug and the weeks and months go by and things kind of cool off. But nothing is resolved. That's where we're at. You know, I don't know, and making that application within this group of people. We all hope, I hope, that I am never so unrepentant, never so arrogant, never so have such an attitude I will not listen to anybody who suggests anything different than me. I hope I don't get to the point where somebody has to speak that plainly to me. It's happened before. More than likely, it'll happen again with me. Maybe with you. I don't know. But let's see to it that we don't end up like so many churches go through, where issues become monsters in our midst. It ought not have to get there. It ought never to get to that point, should it? All right? Right now, I don't know of any issues among us. Maybe I'm naive, but I don't. And we're blessed. We are blessed. Let's love one another. Will we? Let's pray. God, I thank you for your love. God, I am aware that I need these people. I'm aware that they need each other. God, help us to love. Help us to love you. Help us to love one another. God, help us to invest ourselves in each other. Make us strong. Make us joyful. Make us beautiful reflections of your glory and your image. Amen.